Good evening. Welcome to the Shir. I wanted to talk about a very unusual topic, a very unusual topic that I really never spoke about or never learned before, and that's the topic of tattoos. Now, I want to ask a very specific question. It's not a question that I have, but it's a shaila that was asked to Rav Bezalel Stern. Rav Bezalel Stern, I don't know if he's related to Tzafria, but Rav Bezalel Stern was a Hungarish posek who was born in 1911, and he survived the war, and after the war, he moved to Italy, opened up a yeshiva in Rome to help a lot of the survivors in Rome, and then he became the Rav in Melbourne, and he built a yeshiva there, and then he became the Rav of Vienna for 15 years, then he moved to Yerushalayim. His younger brother, is actually a very famous posek also, Rav Moshe Stern, the Be'er Moshe, Shas HaTshuva's Be'er Moshe. So this tshuva that I'm going to share with you tonight is in his Sefer Betzel HaChachma. And there he was asked the following question. There was a fellow who grew up, I don't know if he grew up, he was not religious when he was younger. And when he was not religious, he got a tattoo. And there are two problems with the tattoo. Number one, it was on his upper left bicep, right in the Makom HaTefillin. Number two, the picture of the tattoo was a picture that was of a scantily clad female. It was an inappropriate picture that was tattooed into his upper forearm. As he got older and he became a Baal Tshuva and he felt terrible that not only does he have a tattoo that is an inappropriate picture of what it was, but thirdly, it was on the Makom of Tefillin. And he wanted to know, is he allowed to put on Tefillin on the place of that picture on his arm? So just to show a contrast, somebody sent me, when they found out that I was giving this shiur tonight, somebody showed me the following picture that I would like to share with you that he took himself in our neighborhood in the gym, just to share with you, Mika Amcha Yisrael. So if you look at this screenshot that I'm sharing with you right now, believe it or not, that somebody in our shul went to the gym, and this was somebody in the gym, his arm. So, Baruch Hashem, he doesn't have Shem Hashem. He says, "Mo dani lefenachem elachai v'kim." At least there's no Shem Hashem, because if there was Shem Hashem, maybe he'd have to cut off his arm before he'd go to the bathroom. That's another shaila. But as you could see, people could tattoo all kinds of things onto their arm. Again, this is a real picture. Somebody in our shul took this picture in a local gym from somebody in our neighborhood. So obviously, whatever. It's a sad picture to share, but it's nevertheless. So with that in mind, pretty crazy, no? I was taken when I saw that. With that in mind, we're going to talk about our shaila. And our shaila is going to have a number of aspects to it. And what we're going to first have to do is it mutter or aser to put on tefillin in such a circumstance? That's going to be the first quarter or third of the shiur. Are you allowed to put on tefillin? The second part of the shiur, we'll discuss, if it is a problem, how do you solve the problem? Obviously, there's no clear way to get rid of tattoos. When the shiloh was asked, in the 50s, on the 60s, on the 70s, and the 80s, we'll see what happened in the 90s. In the 90s, there was some technological development, which I'll share with you when we get to the next third of this year. So let me share this screen with you. And I'm going to go to, one second, I have to, there we go. Okay, so the title of the shiur is Inappropriate Tattoo on a Makom Tefillin, an Incredible Tshuva from Bezalel, Rav Bezalel Stern, and Betzel Chach Mechel Kesem and Pe'alev. So look at the, let's go through a number of sources. I shared with you the shaila that he was asked. Let's go through a number of sources that will shed light on our shaila. Can you wear tefillin on a picture that's an inappropriate picture of an Isha Aruma? So the Gemara in Yuma tells us in the halachas of mezuzah, nothing to do with tefillin and nothing to do with tattoos, just the halachas of mezuzah. Beis hateven, you have a place where you keep the straw for the animals. Ubeis habakar, and you have the barn, the stable. Ubeis haetzim, where you keep the firewood. Ubeis haotzros, and your storage locations. Do you have to put tefillin? Do you have to put a mezuzah on those locations? Says the Mishnah, says the Gemara, a very unusual line. They do not have to have a mezuzah. Why? Because the women neosos, beautify themselves, maybe, for the word na'a, themselves there. I'm not sure why women are beautifying themselves in the place where they store the wood and the straw and the cattle. Don't understand that. But anyway, Gemara says, what does it mean they beautify themselves there? My ro'na'osos, ro'chatsos. The women wash themselves. I guess there was running water, or there was a lot of water, maybe for the cattle needed water, there was water near the storehouse, there was outside, there was some more water that was more readily available than in the regular house, and therefore, since the women washed themselves there, there is no chiv of mezuzah. What does washing themselves, women washing themselves, have to do with mezuzah? Look what Rashi says. Ne'osos doesn't mean they beautify themselves, it means they enjoy themselves there, they feel the pleasure of the taking a bath there. Umishum demakum kanaihu. Rashi says, you know why there's no mezuzah in these locations? Mishun demakum kanaihu, she'omdom sham arumos. Since they stand there unclad, ain kvod shamay lios sham mezuzah. It's not appropriate to put a mezuzah in a place where a woman would be undressed. That's what the Gemara, that's how Rashi explains the Gemara. And in fact, that's exactly how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that if there are places where women wash themselves, since they stand there without clothes, it's not kvod shamay to be a mezuzah. Fine. Of course, the Shulchan Aruch says, but on the other hand, if you have a bedroom where a husband and wife are together, there, even though there's Tashma Shamita there, such room is chayv and a mezuzah, except according to another opinion who says that it's not. But we're, either way, the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Mezuzah says, as you see in the end of, in the Ramah, in Hilchas Mezuzah, Reish Pevav, that if there is a room that is for a husband and wife, they should make sure the door is closed when they're together, so that the mezuzah is outside of the room, because you close the door and the mezuzah is outside, because the mezuzah is usually on the outermost part of the width of the doorway. Now that's a halach in Hilchas Mezuzah, because you want to maximize the shmira, the more area that is within the mezuzah space, meaning if you have a doorway that's 6 inches wide, so you want to put the mezuzah at the very beginning of the doorway, of the thickness of the doorway, so that the rest of the 6 inches of doorway are also included in the shmira. So if that's the case, it's most of the time, if the mezuzah is on the outermost part of the thickness of the doorway, so the door is often more in than that, and therefore you could close the door and leave the mezuzah outside so you don't have a problem during Tashma Shamita. That's what the Rama says. Now, based on this idea of not having a mezuzah where women wash, the Bach comes out with a tremendous kula that I don't think we practice nowadays, but you'll see what he says. He says, Mishum hachi, because of this issue that a woman might not be dressed properly, nispashit haminhag, the minhag has developed, she'enos mezuzah ki'im bepesach habayis. The only mezuzah, they're developed a minhag to put a mezuzah only on the front door of the house. No other rooms in the house. You know why? Because some of the other rooms in the house, there might be times when women will not be dressed appropriately and will be in those rooms. That's possible. I mean, we think like bathroom, but it could be other rooms also. And therefore, there was founded this very unusual minhag. He says, but that's not really what we do. Mikarov nago alomdim. But recently, says the Bach, the lomdim have already become accustomed, lasas mezuzah chol hapsachim shebebayis, on all doorways in our house, which is certainly what we do. But you have to be careful that there's no, that you don't have a mezuzah on a room where people are wash themselves. Remember, they didn't have running water only in a certain room. You took a bucket and you took off your clothes and you poured the bucket over your head, and maybe you had a little hole in the floor, you know, outside the little hole to allow the water to drain somewhere. But there was no such thing as a bath. It wasn't like this room had running water and that room didn't. There was no, you know, you had a little house, a little hut with a room or two, and that was your house. You didn't have, you know, eight bedrooms and 4 bathrooms, and we only have running water in the bathrooms and the kitchen, not in the bedrooms. That wasn't the case. Fine. So that is all regarding mezuzah. But what do we see from that? We see clearly that in Hilchos Mezuzah, the mezuzah should not be in a place where there is a woman who is undressed. Now, that's also the halacha, by the way, in tefillin also, because the Shulchan Aruch talks about, you might remember the Gemara in Brachos talks about this, I believe, but tefillin, can you wear tefillin in a Beis HaMerechatz? So the Shulchan Aruch tells you there are three different kinds of rooms in the Beis HaMerchas. There's a lot an outside lobby, that's okay, everyone's wearing dress there. There's the inside room where they actually have the pool, that's where people are not dressed. There you definitely can't wear your tefillin. What do you see? You see that you're not allowed to wear a tefillin where there's people who are not dressed. So we have both by mezuzah and now here by tefillin as well, if somebody's undressed, tefillin cannot be worn, mezuzah cannot be placed. And based on that, so gufnaki is unrelated to this. Gufnaki has nothing to do with our discussion. Gufnaki means they're not having gas in their, they don't have a gas in their intestines. But hirhurim, that's something that we'll raise a little bit later, right? That's another question that's separate and apart from the objective. I mean, even if he was not thinking anything, there's still an objective problem, as we'll see. Look what he says. The Rebbe Tzal Stern says, "Pashut ubarer she'aser lahaniach tefillin al makom tzurazu." On top of this tattoo that he has on his arm, it is absolutely clear that it's aser to put tefillin. And he brings all the sources that I just took are all from this that I brought to you are from his tshuva. And he points out that even though you could distinguish and say all those sources that we talked about, no mezuzah on a room where women are washing, or no tefillin in the bathhouse in the mikvah, they're talking about a real person, right? A real human being. You can't have tefillin or a mezuzah where there are human beings who are undressed. So he says that's true, but it shouldn't be any different between human beings who are undressed or a picture of a human being who are undressed. As far as bizayon kisvei hakodesh, he says, I don't see why there should be a distinction. Okay. So therefore, he comes out that it's absolutely ulcer for this gentleman to wear this tefillin on that arm. And then he brings a fabulous, shaila from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer talked about a very unusual shaila. Shaila happened like this. There was once a sofer who wanted to decorate, maybe he was commissioned to decorate the shul. And he made a beautiful, I don't know if he did it, tablet he did it. I don't know if he did it on parchment or he did it on stone, but he chiseled it into stone or he wrote it with parchment with ink on cloth. Beautiful pasuk zeh hashar la Hashem tzadikim yavovo. And when he wrote the words la Hashem, he wrote the yud and hey and then avav and the hey. And this beautiful mural was supposed to be pasted or plastered onto the entranceway of the shul. With Yud-K and the Vav-K, came some Rasha, some Apikores, that's the words that he's quoting here for the Chasam Sofer, and he took that mural, he grabbed that mural, or that chisel work, that sculpture, whatever it was, and he pasted it on the door of the bathhouse in the neighborhood in a way that it could not be removed from there. So now we have a very awkward situation. We have a pasuk zeh Hashem tzadikim yavovo with yud kei vav kei spelled out, and it's attached, plastered, glued, whatever it is, to the bathhouse. Could it be removed? Is it allowed to be there? Look what the Chasam Sofer paskind. Hora Chasam Sofer, the Chasam Sofer paskind, you should erase Shem Hashem. Now, isn't that an issa d'oraisa? Erasing Shem Hashem might be an issa d'oraisa. I'm not sure if it's d'oraisa d'rabbana, but we learned it from a pasuk. Maybe it's only an asmachta. It says, "Abei tabdun es kolam ekamos ha'shavdu sham ha'goyim," something like that. You should destroy everything about the Avodah Zarah. And we darshan, you should destroy Avodah Zarah, but not destroy Shem Hashem. Here, the Chasam Sofer says, take a chisel, take a razor, and scratch out the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Why? Because a beautiful svara, very logical. To kevan shehashem omed bibizayon, right now, Shem Hashem is Bibi Zion. And therefore, to erase it is Kvod Shamayim. Normally, when you erase something that's denigrating it, you're erasing something, it's denigrating it. Here, to erase it is the Kavod of that Inyan. So, with that in mind, says Rav Bitzal Stern, if you're allowed to erase, if there's a Shem Hashem that you have to erase because it's near on a bathhouse, certainly when you have tefillin that has many, many shemos of Hashem, suggests Rabbi Tzal Stern, it should be aser to put it in a place that's in a makom bizayon. If a Shem Hashem is in a makom bizayon, you're allowed to erase it. Certainly you shouldn't be taking a tefillin that is full of Azkaras of Shem as Hashem and putting it in a Makom B'Zayon. And therefore, Rizal Stern says you can't take a tefillin and put it on that arm. And furthermore, this is the point that Avi made before, that there's a totally other concern that you're not allowed to, when a person wears tefillin, he's supposed to wear tefillin all but Kedusha, Betara, and certainly not in a way that a person could come to inappropriate thoughts. And here, if he puts on his tefillin, he looks down at his arm, he'll come to hear her shalavera. And that's certainly a problem, a separate problem. So forget about the cover of the tefillin, there's a separate problem that it's going to generate hurim. And therefore he comes out that it's usur for this person to put on tefillin. So Rabbosai, we now have a dedicated Ernst Baal Tshuva who desperately wants to put on tefillin, and the rabbi tells him, you're not allowed to put on tefillin. For how long? I guess for the rest of his life. Well, maybe head tefillin he's allowed to wear, but he's never going to be able to put on an arm tefillin for the rest of his life. That sounds frightening, doesn't it? Can you imagine somebody, like I understand, somebody gets their arm chopped off, Rachman Litzlan, okay, they'll put tefillin on their other arm. God forbid a person has two arms chopped off, Rachman Litzlan, I imagine the torment that they experience, they can't ever put on tefillin for the rest of their life. Here you have a guy who's healthy, two arms, and he feels so stupid for the things that he did in his youth that he's going to make it not able to have tefillin put on. It's not like he could put on his right arm either, because since he has both arms, the din d'oraisa is to put it on the left arm. But because of this tattoo he has, putting on the left arm is going to be usur. So that's the tshuva. And that's the first third of the shir. The next part of the next two thirds is going to be, so what do we do about this poor guy? So I want to share with you a little bit of history about tattoo removal. There's a modern tattoo removal, which we'll learn about right now, and then we'll see what used to be used earlier. Right now, what they do, at least again, I don't know if there's anything, we have to ask Dr. Fox if there's anything newer, there's something called Q-switched lasers. What is that? So the Q-switched lasers target different colors of tattoo ink depending on the specific light absorption spectra of the different tattoo pigments, meaning you have different colors in the tattoo, and they pick a laser that is appropriate to get rid of that color, and each color is dealt with differently with a different shoot of the laser. So for example, typically, black and dark colored inks could be removed completely with these Q-switch lasers, but white, light colors like yellows and greens are very difficult to remove. Obviously, success depends on skin color, ink color, depth of the ink. When did this come available? We're talking about modern technology. Sorry. It only became available in the early 1990s. A few decades before that, they had regular lasers. Regular lasers just shoot a lot of high energy at that area and destroy the surrounding tissue, including the tattoo ink. Obviously, there's pain and there's scarring when you just destroy tissue. So we have early 1990s, we have something, this Q-switched laser. A few decades before that, we have regular lasers. But what do we do before that? So again, remember, tattoos are not new. Tattoos have been around since Matan Torah, as the Pasuk speaks about them, Ksoves Ka'aka Lo Sitnu B'Vsarchem, I think. So we know that there's been tattooing for thousands of years. The question is, what did they do to get rid of tattoos? It's not just modern people that realize as they get older and they say, all of a sudden, you know, they make a tattoo, I love Lucy, and then they break up with Lucy 3 months later, so they don't want to be tattooed with Lucy, especially when they meet Cindy. That's just not going to work so well. So that's not a new thing. So earlier, they had other things that are much more, sounds a little painful. Look at what we have here. Dermabrasion. I guess that just means rubbing the skin, scratching the levels of the layers of the skin off. Doesn't sound so pleasant. TCA, some kind of acid that removes the whole bunch of layers of skin as deep as the ink. Salabrasion, scrubbing the skin with salt. Cryosurgery, excision with knives, with skin grafting, not pleasant. So there are not such great opportunities to deal with getting a tattoo off, especially if it's before the lasers. So what could we do? So now we have Rabbi Tzala Stern in the next tshuva. The first tshuva was that he cannot put on tefillin. The next tshuva is, okay, so what does he do? And look at what the way the tshuva, I cut out most of it because of time. But now that he realizes this fellow, he's so terribly pained by this. Now he sees it as a disgusting blip on his arm, and he can't find any peace, so how does he get rid of it? So the suggestion is going to be the following. Rav Bezalel Stern is now going to suggest something that sounds absolutely counterintuitive. You know what he's going to say? Get another tattoo on top. What? The whole problem is that he violated an Issa Daraisa. I mean, that's not the problem. The problem is that what he did, you know, what he tattooed. But a tattoo is an Issa Daraisa. So because you have one tattoo, therefore you're allowed to get another tattoo? We do one wrong and you do another wrong to make it right? That doesn't make sense. Two wrongs don't make it right. How in the world are you supposed to cover it over with another tattoo? So we're going to try to build a whole structure right now. This is the second half of the shiur. We're going to try to put together a whole bunch of kulas. Now we're going to get into a little bit of the halachas of tattoos and learn some halachas that we never learned before, at least I never knew before. And with those various aspects of Hilchos tattoo, we're going to try to construct a situation or a scenario where it will be permitted to get a second tattoo on top of the first one to cover over the image or to blot out the image, the inappropriate image that he had on his biceps. And once it's covered over, there won't be any figure there that's an inappropriate figure, and then he will be able to put on tefillin. That's going to be the goal of the next half of the shiur. So first, we're going to go to Hilchos Shabbos. And we have a Mishnah in Hilchos Shabbos that talks about ksav al gabe ksav. Now we know one of the 39 malachas of Shabbos is that you're not allowed to write ksiva. What happens if you write? You write, you know, when you have a kid in kindergarten or pre-1A and they're learning to write, so sometimes they get a book or a little pamphlet or a sheet that they have to trace the letters already written there, and they have to trace to practice to form the letters properly, trace on top of the letter that's already there. That's ksav al gabi ksav. So if somebody wrote, if there's something written on previously, before Shabbos, comes a Jew with a pen on Shabbos, and he writes, or she writes, directly on top of the letters that are already there, below. So this second level of writing is considered in Hilchos Shabbos, pater. Why is it pater? Now, maybe it's weird, and you're not chayiv d'oraisa on weird things on Shabbos. Or maybe it's not called kosev. Maybe the definition of writing in the Torah's lexicon, in the Torah's perspective, writing means clear piece of paper and putting something anew for the first time that was never on this piece of paper. But if you write on something that's already there, that's hasekhen writing. That's not called writing. That's a question. Because remember, this mission that we just learned is in Hilchos Shabbos. And now I want to extend this to the halachas of tattooing on a Tuesday afternoon? Let's see. Comes the Gemara in Gittin and tells us about another case of writing on Shabbos. But here it's going to be, not that he took ink and wrote on top of ink, but let's see what he says. Hamavir dio agabe sikra. Sikra was like a red ink. Dio, let's assume, is a black or a blue ink. If you wrote with black ink on top of red ink on Shabbos, there's machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. One opinion says, Yechayiv Shtayim. That if you did that, you violated two averis midaraisa. Achas mishum kosev, because you wrote. Why? Because it's a new color. It's black on top of red. On the other, and also simultaneously, while you did write this second writing on the upper one, you also erased the one that is below it. You completely covered over the one below it. So you're chayiv for two. Mochek. That's the first point. Then the Gemara continues with two other cases. Dio al gabe dio. If you put black on top of black or red on top of red, in other words, you put the same thing on top of the same thing that's below it, putter. That's the case of ksav al gabe ksav. Interesting. So if you have different colors, one on top of the other, then it could still be writing. If you have the same color on top of the same color, oh, that's going to be putter. Now, let's just apply that to our case. If I have a picture, whatever the picture is, on this guy's forearm, on this guy's bicep, left bicep, the only time that it's not going to be an Issa D'oraisa, I'm sorry, again, this is by Shabbos. If we want to take this idea of Shabbos and apply it to tattooing, if you put the same exact color on the same exact color that's below it, then it's not called writing D'oraisa. But that's not going to help, because if you put the same color on top of what's below it, you're just going to have another picture. You had an inappropriate picture, now you're going to make another inappropriate picture, because that's the only way you could get the same colors on top of the same color that was below it. So you didn't get any, you didn't accomplish anything. Okay. Without going into that sugya too much, what we really have to figure out is, do we apply that rule, those rules that we just learned about what it constitutes kosev for Shabbos purposes, for ksiva, for the lamentet, one of the lamentet's malachas of kosev on Shabbos, do we say the same thing by tattooing? Says Rabbi Tzal Stern, I learned the sugya. Linyan lav de ksoves ka'aka, which is a tattoo, lo matzasi mevur, I haven't found neither in Shas, nor the Rishonim, nor the Achronim, what's the halacha by a tattoo of ksav al gabe ksav? All we have is a sugya by Shabbos. Do I have a right to relate, to correlate, to transpose the halachas that I know by Shabbos onto the sugya of tattooing? So says Rabbi Tzal Stern, and maybe he brings a few proofs, which we're not going to go into, I think that we're going to apply the same rules. Whatever ksav is considered ksav by Shabbos, if ink on top of ink is not considered a ksav, so I don't think for tattooing it will be ksav either. And therefore, if you have an ink on top of the bottom ink, and it does not improve it at all, then it will not be considered a writing, or not be considered that you wrote another tattoo. That's the suggestion that he's going to have, that if we're going to create this upper level of ink, that the upper level of ink will be worse, will not be as good as the bottom level of ink, based on whatever, which we don't have to get into now, that will not be considered writing, and maybe that will be a way to blot out what's written on the arm below. Because ksav al gabi ksav is not ksav. There's one problem. The problem is that ksav al gabi ksav, certainly by Shabbos, is not permitted. It just means you're not chayev, skila, achatas, kares. Doesn't mean that's allowed. Are you allowed to take a pen on Shabbos and copy that stencil that your kid came home with from first grade and write over those letters that the mora wrote and copy over those on Shabbos? It's ksav gabi ksav. Doesn't mean that it's mutter. It just means that it's you're not chayev. So it's still asa d'rabbanan, and therefore even it's shelo kedarko. It's still asa d'rabbanan, and therefore, on one hand, you avoided the issa d'raisa, but it still is going to be asa d'rabbanan. That's the first. What's that? So the spots that you didn't cover, yeah, that will be a problem. We're going to have to make sure you don't cover new spots. Yeah, but if you cover it with different colors that are worse colors than the bottom one, whatever worse means, which we're not going to get into, that would solve the problem. Correct. Like if on the bottom there was red and you put black on it, or I'm sorry, Dio al Gabi, Sikro al Gabi Dio, right, if you put, okay, fine. So now we're going to raise a second issue, a second heter maybe to throw into the hopper and perhaps make it another way to allow the possibility of putting on another layer of tattoo on top of this bottom layer of tattoo of this inappropriate picture that's on his arm that prevents him from putting on tefillin. Okay. This is a fascinating point in Hilchus tattoo. Does it matter what the reason why a person tattoos themselves? Does it make a difference what your kafan is? When you go to that tattoo parlor, does it make a difference why you wanted to get that tattoo? You want to get that tattoo because the gang says you have to wear the tattoo. You want to get the tattoo because your girlfriend said, I'll only, you know, marry you if you tattoo me onto your arm, because then I know you're not going to drop me. You only put on that tattoo because you want to be branded as whatever it is. You want to be in a Hershey's chocolate commercial. If you tattoo the word Hershey's onto your back, then they'll feature you in a commercial. Does that matter what your reasons are? So look at an incredible, incredible line in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says the following. Shulchan Aruch says, Haroshem al avdo delo yivrach. If you make a mark, I'm not sure here if it's talking about a tattoo or a scratch, onto your eved, delo yivrach, so he doesn't run away. you're potter. That's not an issa d'oraisa. Maybe it's still issa d'rabbanan. But think of like a branding, when you brand a an animal on a farm, right? You know, the triple K or the triple triangle, whatever they call it. You know, the branding, they brand the side of the cow, and it has some shape that they everyone knows is from this ranch. It's from this dairy farm. It's from this place where they grow animals. And every ranch has their own symbol. But here you're doing it to your Eved. You want your Eved not to run away, so you brand or you do something to the Eved. So that, I think, even in the case of again, either scratching into their body or tattooing into their body, you're not chayiv midoraisa. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. Why? Why? So I'm going to share with you a suggestion that has been made that Rebbe Tzal Stern quotes. Tama Heter. Well, let's think about, again, this is going a little bit into the Tam HaMitzvah, but nevertheless, why did the Torah say, why did Hashem say, I don't want you to tattoo? It's reasonable to assume that it was because Chukas HaAkum. That's what the pagans of yesteryear did. They tattooed themselves. So as a way to avoid Chukas HaAkum, we shouldn't tattoo ourselves. Ah. If you are going to brand your Eved with a brand, with a tattoo, so that he doesn't run away, that's nothing to do because you want to be like the pagans. It's nothing to do because you want to be like the Goyim. You want to look like the Goyim, but they tattoo, so I want a tattoo. Nothing to do with that. You have a very specific reason. You don't want your Eved to be able to run away. You want it to be branded. That's why it's not Asa D'Oraisa. Oh. With that logic, extends Rebbe Tzal Stern the following. If the whole reason for you to put this second layer of tattoo is because you want it not to be writing, not to be similar to the Goyim, not to be anything Chukas HaAkum, but to the contrary, you want to erase what's below it, that shouldn't be a violation of the Issa D'Oraisa. Because what's the Issa D'Oraisa? The Issa D'Oraisa is that you want to look like a certain thing. You want it to look like a certain way. You want to do it like other people do it. And what are you, now that the person has the tattoo and he's putting this thing on top to blot out that which is below it, that's not being like the Goyim. That's not Kechukas HaAkum. And maybe that would be another reason to be Mako. Now, I don't know if that's a svara to be Matir Nisa D'Oraisa, but at least, as the Shulchan Aruch says, you're putter. It's not mutter, but at least you're not going to be Chayiv D'Oraisa. So that was our second heter. The first heter is that it's ksav al gabi ksav. This second heter is that the purpose of why you're doing it is to blot out and not to be productive or to look cool or to look like the Goyim or to look like anybody. Now we're going to go to the third heter, possibly. Okay, let's go back to Hilchas Shabbos for a second. Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, before we go to Hilchas Shabbos, is there any halacha that says that you're not allowed to get a tattoo only if it's a certain shape, a letter, a picture? After all, in Hilchos Shabbos, there's an Issa D'Oraisa of writing on Shabbos, of course. But you know the Mishnah says when it comes to Shabbos, you only violate Shabbos Midoraisa if you write not even one letter, two letters. You have to write two letters. If you didn't write two letters, you write one letter. You just made a line with a pen on Shabbos, on a piece of paper. You didn't violate Shabbos Midoraisa. You have to write two letters. And there are halachos about what the kind of letter is and how the letters are written. All languages, only Hebrew. Let's assume all languages. Does that logic apply also to tattoos? Are you also only chaya for a tattoo if you write, you know, Aleph Beis or Gimel Dalet or I Love Lucy, I-L-O-V-E-L-U-C-Y? Let me ask you a different question. What would be the halacha on Shabbos? On a d'oraisa level, would you get skila or koris or bring korban chatas if on Shabbos you drew a picture on a piece of paper? No letters whatsoever. We all know the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, hakosev, shnei osios. What happens if you didn't write shnei osios? You drew a picture. It happens to be, by the way, the Rambam writes that when it comes to Shabbos, he says, either you wrote letters or you etzar tzura, or you roshem, I don't remember his words. Even if you make a figure, even if you make a stick figure, you make a circle with a line down and a two stick feet and two stick arms, that would also be chayiv midoraisa when it comes to Shabbos, I believe. I don't think it's just two letters. I think it's a picture also. I think the Rambam considers it also. So maybe, this is the question, could we say that just like by Shabbos, it's only considered kosev if you write letters or a real picture? But if you just blotch and blot, you'd pour some ink on paper, or you just take a magic marker and just scribble all over the paper where there's no form, there's no design, there's no shape of letters, there's no picture at all, that's not Chayav D'Oraisa by Shabbos. So maybe if I'm going to take a second tattoo and just cover over the blotch over the first tattoo without any specified picture or design, maybe that also would not violate tattooing, just like it doesn't violate Shabbos. So here, Rabbi Tzalel Stern has an incredible diuk in the smak. Look at the smak. Look at the word of the smak. B'smak kosav. What is the mitzvah? This smak was a sefer mitzvahs hakotzer, where he lists the mitzvahs and describes them. It's a sefer mitzvahs. There's an iser to make a tattoo, and the smak says, look at his words. Ve'eno chayev, ad sheyichtov v'yikakeya. Right, there are two parts of every tattoo. There's the piercing the skin, and then there's the applying the ink. You have to pierce skin and then pour the ink on top, or you put ink on the skin and then pierce it with the needle. That's how they used to do it in the olden days, one of those two ways, so that the ink could penetrate below the external, the epidermis, the outside level of the skin, right? Dr. Pinter, the epidermis is the outer level, doctor? Yes? Okay, thank you. And the smak says, look what the smak says, Perish Yisrot Ke'en Osios. He says the Isr is, if you do it, as if you're making letters. It sounds from the smak that Stam Roshem, if you just make a blotch or you make a scribble, that's not considered a kosev. So maybe here we would have a solution. Maybe here we would have, if you're doing it just as a blotch, that's not going to be considered. That's not going to be considered a tattoo because it doesn't have any shape. So therefore, we're going to add one more knach now before we get to a punchline. There's a line in the Shulchan Aruch. Let me ask you a question. You're not allowed to do a tattoo. Is the issur of tattoo on the person who owns the tattoo parlor who gives the tattoo? Or is it an isser on the client who gets the tattoo? Or is it on both? We know from Lo Sakifu Pa'as Roshchem, by cutting off payas, Sakifu is in Lashon Rabim, right, Daddy? Sakifu is Lashon Rabim. You taught me that Rabim and Yachid. So if it's Lashon Rabim, it applies both to the Makif and the Nikaf, both to the person giving the haircut and shaving off the payas and the person who's getting his payas shaved off, because of the plural of the word sakifu. So does that same double prohibition apply not only to payas, but all, which is to both the makif and the nikif, the cutter and the kari, the barber and the barberi? I don't know what the guy in the barber's chair is called. So what are we going to... Are we going to say the same rule when it comes to a tattoo, the tattooer and the tattooee? That sounds like ratatouille. But look at what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Im osekein al basar al basar chavero." If a tattooer gives a tattoo not to himself, if you do it to yourself, of course you're the tattooer and the tattooee. Then of course you're going to be chayev. Of course you did everything. But what happens if you do it to your friend? Says the Shulchan Aruch. This is the Shulchan Aruch's psak. Oso shenaselo, the one who receives the tattoo is potter. It's asur d'rabbanan, but the recipient is only violating it mid'rabbanan, not mid'oraisa, unless el imkein siyeya badavar, he assisted in the matter. Meaning, if the guy in the tattoo parlor says, stretch out your arm, and you stretch out your arm, or turn your arm like that, and you turn on your like that, so then you're assisting, and then you're participating, and you're going to violate the isur d'oraisa yourself. But if you stand rock, still like a log, still like a stone, and a tattoo guy comes and he starts working on you, and you don't move at all, you don't twitch, and he says, okay, shift to the left, and you don't move, shift to the right, and you don't move, turn your arm over, you don't move. So then, you, the recipient, do not get any Isser D'Oraisa. Wow. So, with all of these things that we just put together, we just mentioned a whole bunch of kulas that we could try to put together. And based on that, Rabbi Tzal Stern is going to try to compile all these different svaras that we said into one cohesive solution to our Baal Tshuva, who has an inappropriate picture on his tefillin arm. He says, you know what I think we should do? We just said that if somebody's going to get the tattoo, he doesn't violate an issue if he doesn't move. The guy giving the tattoo does. So I have an idea. Why don't you make sure that the guy who gives the tattoo is not Jewish? Oh, if he's not Jewish, then the one who's doing the iser is not obligated. Seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. That's Ritzicha, Dinim, Gneva, Eved Menachai. It doesn't say you can't get a tattoo. Now, Gentiles are totally permitted to get tattoos and give tattoos. So let the Gentile give you the tattoo, or this guy, this Baal Tshuva, who wants to put on tefillin. Let the Gentile give him a tattoo. And make sure that this Baal Tshuva who wants to cover over his arm, his picture on the arm, doesn't move around. So if he gets tattooed by a guy, the guy is violating Issa D'oraisa, but he doesn't have an Issa D'oraisa, he's a guy. And the recipient is not moving, so for the recipient to get tattooed by a guy, if he doesn't assist, he doesn't move his arm around, it's only going to be an Issa Mide Rabbanan. Okay, we're still going to have to figure out what to do with an Issa D'Rabbanan. But look what Rabbi Tzal Stern suggests. Lachem, benido didan. Nielan is that. Nachon, the good thing to do is, sheyomer la'akum, you should tell a guy, lekakeo los ritos, onekudos, bialma. Why don't you start putting dots on me, on my arm, or some lines and dots, without any picture, all over that disgusting image on his left arm, and it will basically cover and blotch out the figure that's on the arm. And the Baal Tshuva, the recipient, won't move. He'll just stand still. That's the solution. The problem is that there's still an Issa D'Rabbanan to tell a guy to do something for you. We know on Shabbos that there's an Issa of Amir L'Nachri. You can't tell a guy to do work for you on Shabbos. What about by other things? Could you tell a guy to do other Isurim D'Oraisa? Could you tell a guy to do cirrus, to neuter your animal, right? You buy a dog, you buy a cat, you want to spay it or neuter it. An Issa D'Oraisa. So you're not going to do it. Could you take it to the vet and ask the vet to neuter it or to spay it? That's a long discussion among the poskim. Pashtus, you can't do that. Yeah, there's a complicated way. You have to give the animal away to a guy, and the guy does it with not for you. It's very. You can't tell a guy to do an Issa D'Oraisa. You know why? Because Amira L'Nachri does not only apply by Shabbos, it applies by other Isurim as well. And therefore, even though we just finished saying that a guy doesn't have the mitzvah of tattooing, but I can't tell a guy to tattoo. If I tell a guy to tattoo, that's Amira L'Nachri. So how can I ask the guy to make this blotch on my arm? It should at least be an Issa D'Rabbanan of Amira L'Nachri. And here is the magic. Look at what Rabbi Tzal Stern is about to say. Look at the three points that I just highlighted. Says Rabbi Tzal Stern, if we put all the things that we learned tonight together, I have a triple D'Rabbanan. Look, number one, it's Ksav al Gabi Ksav. Right? There's already a picture there, and I'm going to put something on top of that. Now, Ksav al Gabi Ksav doesn't make it mutter, it's still Asa D'Rabbanan. Number two, what's the intent? You remember we talked about the intent? We saw the Shulchan Aruch said that if you brand an Eved to make just so he doesn't run away, that's not considered an Issa D'Oraisa because it's not the intent of branding. It's not because you want to write on him. Okay, it's still it's not Issa D'Oraisa if your intent is just to ruin the picture, not to improve a picture. But it's still Issa D'Rabbanan. Thirdly, you're not making a picture or writing letters. You're just making a blotch, a scribble. Just lines and dots and to cover it over. But that's also Asa D'Rabbanan. Guess what? If something is Asur only because it's three D'Rabbanans, look at what Rabbi Tzal Stern says. Ubitlasa D'Rabbanan vadai sheyesh lahatir afilu lechatchila lechulei alma. something that is only asur because of a triple concern. It's I'm concerned for one drabbanon, and then another drabbanon, and another drabbanon. It's a case that has three drabbanons built in. Remember, this is a case where you're asking a guy, it's actually a fourth drabbanon. You're asking a guy to do a ksav al gabi ksav, which is only asur drabbanon. That's and the ksav al gabi ksav is mekalkel. That's the third drabbanon. And fourthly, he's not even making a shape. So you have so many. It's only usher if you would hold from all these yisurim drabbanon all together. If you have this many yisurim drabbanon coming together to make it usher, the only way it's usher is if you hold from every yisurim drabbanon. It would be gzeira. That's mutar lechatchila. And therefore, Rabbi Tzalel Stern comes out according to this logic. We didn't finish yet, but according to this logic, it would be mutter because of all these to ask a guy. That the Baal Shuah should say, Mr. Guy, I'm not going to move, I'm going to stay still. Could you please put a ksav gabi ksav? That will be just dots that don't have any figure, that don't have any shape, and with the intent to ruin the picture on my arm. And then it should be mutter. Now I'm going to add even another reason lahatir, and this is a beautiful idea that, again, I never knew until today. There's a mission in Makos, maybe you remember when you learned Makos. The Mishnah is talking about the halachas of tattooing, actually, towards the end of Makos. And then there's an opinion, we don't pass like this opinion, but Reb Shimon says a very unusual phrase. Actually, let's start with the Torah's, the pasuk, that talks about not putting a tattoo on your body. The Torah says, it's highlighted on your screen, ksoves ka'aka, a tattoo, literally ksoves, a writing that is embedded. Ka'aka means it's embedded. Ksoves ka'aka lo setnu b'chem. Don't put it on you, Ani Hashem. What are those two words, Ani Hashem, adding? So you know what Reb Shimon learns from those two words? Reb Shimon says, in the underlying phrase, Eino chayev, you're not chayev for any tattoo, ad sh'yichtov sham es Hashem, until you write God's name. Meaning, the only time that you violate tattooing is if you wrote God's name in the tattoo. Don't tattoo yourselves, Ani Hashem. So if you look at our friend who we saw a moment ago, he was very frum. Because if you notice this picture, it says, he didn't write Shem Hashem there. So according to Reb Shimon, he did not violate tattooing. Because Moda Ani does not have Shem Hashem, by the way. Of course, Moda Ani doesn't have Shem Hashem, because Chazal wanted us to say it right as we wake up in the morning, even before we had a chance to wash our hands are still dirty, so it has to be without Shem Hashem. Okay, but back to our show. Asks the Gemara, what? The only time that you violate making a tattoo is if you tattoo God's name into your body? Ad yichsev ani Hashem mamish? Says the Gemara, no. You don't understand it. It's the opposite. The Isser of tattooing, Reb Shimon says, is only if you write a shame of an Avodah Zarah. Why? Because the Torah says, Shnemar ksoves ka'aka lo sitnu b'chem ani Hashem, as if to say, don't put a tattoo on you, because I'm Hashem, ani Hashem v'lo acher. No one else is your God, therefore don't put any other name there. So according to Reb Shimon, the only time you violate a tattoo midaraisa is if you tattoo a name of a god, of a foreign god. If you would tattoo some other god's name into your body, that's a tattoo, d'oraisa. But that's not going to help us. I mean, yes, it's a great kula, because this guy had a scantily clad woman on his arm, not a Shem Hashem, so it's not a... And the second tattoo is also just going to be blotching out, so it's not going to be a Hashem's name. But this is only Reb Shimon's opinion. We don't hold like that. We hold that any tattoo is usur, even if you just make a picture of a, you know, I don't know, an arm and a gun and a rose, for example. That itself would be an usur d'oraisa, even if it's not a pagan name. But comes Reb Tzalel Stern and says, "Wow, I looked around and I found that there's some Rishonim, the Rif and the Rush, actually write." That they paskin, we don't paskin like this, but there are some Rishon who paskin like this. Wild opinion of Reb Shimon. This wild opinion of Reb Shimon says that you're only chayv midoraisa for a tattoo is if you write a pagan god's name. Incredible. And therefore, that's another kula to add into the hopper. So now we have four kulas. An amir l'nachri on doing four things that are only us the Rabbanan. We have zamir l'nachri, and it's only a blotch. It's only ksav gabi ksav. And it's for the intent of ruining, not of writing. And it's not a picture. And it's not a pagan god's name. So we have so many reasons to be lenient. And now we'll finish. We're gonna. He gets into some other things which we're not going to get into. And therefore, he says, in the end, certainly, I don't know where it is. Where does he say this? Hold on. So he comes out at the end of the tshuva saying that in a case like this, where it's for the mitzvah purpose of being able to put on tefillin, again, right now he can't put on tefillin until he gets this next tattoo by a guy blotching it without the intent of being improving it, it will be usur. But when he does, since it's for the purpose of putting on tefillin, being able to do a mitzvah, and there are so many drabanans that we're putting together, it will be permitted to blotch on top of what he has a different shape that will blotch out the shape that he has on his arm. That is the concluding psak of Rabbi Bezalel Stern. And that is an incredible kula that he comes out with. So therefore, halach l'maiso, again, we have the question, what could somebody do if they have this inappropriate picture on their upper bicep, left bicep? The answer is, they could have a guy blotch it out with another tattoo, a second tattoo, blotched out by making sure that the purpose is not to be writing, the design is not a design, it's done by a guy, the recipient shouldn't move, shouldn't be misayaya, it's not l'shem avodah zarah, it's not with the name of avodah zarah, there's no design there, and with all these things put together, Bezalel Stern comes out that it would be mutter to receive, to have the guy give him the tattoo. So that's the discussion tonight. I want to thank you all for joining. Let me just turn off my